Welcome to episode 2 of the Dads Lifting Dads podcast. Today's episode is with James Shirar. James is a qualified counsellor, a men's group facilitator, owner of Mindfully Primal, a coaching and counselling service with a focus on movement, mental health and men. Most of all, James is an extremely loving partner to Candace and a powerfully conscious parent to his two amazing kids, Scarlett and Ava. In this episode, you'll understand that James has done a huge amount of work on himself and is an extremely connected human spiritually. He is also the first person to tell you that he's not a perfect partner, dad, or human. How James has got to this point and his story is something of incredible value. He's chosen to use his past, his trauma, and his story, not as an anchor that has defined him, but as armor that he wears proudly. James is extremely raw, real, open and vulnerable in this episode, and there is not only so much value in what he shares, but there are so many tools he uses and shares with us that will be able to help so many dads in their lives. Welcome to the Dads Lifting Dads podcast. A space for dads to share their experiences in what I like to call the great equalizer in life, parenting. Welcome to the Dads Lifting Dads podcast, James Shirar.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Dave, oh, I did it, yes!
No, thanks for having me, Daniel. You have to cut that one out.
No, that's staying in there.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Daniel. Yeah, my pleasure to jump on this podcast and yeah, be a part of the community that you're creating. I think what you're doing is fucking amazing. Dads Lifting Dads, when I seen that come out, I just thought, yes, more dads are starting to take back the power and I guess move through fatherhood consciously. Made me feel not alone because I haven't met many fathers since having my own kids that are in this same process. So thanks for having me. I look forward to having this conversation.
I receive all of that, my friend. I receive all of that. Thank you. And you touch on something there. We might dive into that straight away if you don't mind. Why is it hard for dads to connect to other dads, you think?
Something that's been coming up for myself lately, diving into myself, I feel like it's around vulnerability, and we as males in society, in the culture conditioning, are told not to be vulnerable, not to express emotion, and not to do any of that. So as a father, it's like you fall into this. I'm a dad now. I've just got to work. I've got to get the money. I've got to provide. You know, I'm not allowed to do anything else but that. I can't thrive. I have to survive. I can't expand. I have to decompress almost. It's like I can't do all these beautiful things. So then it's like when men hold that kind of limiting belief or those kind of feelings or emotions, we actually stop ourselves from connecting with beautiful men or fathers that also want to connect and expand and grow and know that to be able to role model truly and authentically from the heart for your children is doing the things you love. It's going after your passions and your dreams. And it's, you know, it's not easy to step out of that culture conditioning. So yeah, like you said, it's like, why is it so hard for men to connect in this way? I feel like it's all around this vulnerability and being seen and heard fully, and what people are going to think, the judgment upon that. You know, you see in the culture now, there's a lot of women who are mums and they're just boom, they're fucking queens, man. They're out there and they're just consciously creating all that kind of stuff, and there are fathers out there doing that. But it's just now it's starting to emerge. You're starting to see the dads that are just stepping up and, you know, really taking their power back. And it's awesome to see. So I guess for me, to answer the question, it's all around vulnerability. And I feel like vulnerability is a strength and being able to show that. So
yeah, mate, I'm we haven't specifically talked about that exact question, but yeah, you hit the nail on the head. And I think we, as dads, we don't even know where to start sometimes. And I think the starting point, you know, and they say the starting point is at the starting point, just start, just, you know, try and get yourself around, reach out, yeah, be vulnerable. And, you know, because the worst thing that can happen is your ego gets a little bit dented and that's it.
That's the truth right there. It's the worst that can happen is you might get a little dent in your ego, but ultimately that's the only way to break the ego and dismantle it. You have to dent it until it gets a bit loose. I think what you said just then was quite powerful, is taking the first step, whatever that might be for you. It doesn't mean you have to go post stuff online. It doesn't mean you have to go jump into a group straight away. It might just be sharing how you're feeling as a father to your parents or to a friend or to your partner, you know, or being truthful with yourself, writing it in a journal, or, you know, expressing it to yourself in a mirror. That's their moments of vulnerability, and that could be the first step in which they'll take you to the next one and then the next one.
Yeah.
And then the ball will get rolling and it will get easier and easier.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I don't know whether overcomplicate vulnerability is what I'm trying to ask, but we just don't know what vulnerability can look like. And I think you really simplified it then, just by, you know, sharing to someone in a journal. Just it's such a, that's how, and I say it's easy, but that's how simple that can be, and it can open the doors to so many different things. I think, yeah, it's a beautiful way to put it, and it doesn't hopefully doesn't scare off, because I know saying to be vulnerable scares off a lot of people. And I think to just open up and share a feeling, I don't think that's as scary as looking at vulnerability at a whole kind of total level.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think if you look at it from perspective, if you're a dad and you've got kids, that's far more scary than, in my eyes, and the challenges that we face every fucking day is far more scary and challenging than sharing a feeling with someone or writing in a journal. Like, if you can't write something in your journal, there's some stuff that's going to be powerful for you just to shift through that. Just to write in a book a few lines, that in itself will be so shifting, because you're meeting the resistance and the fear, and you're going to go in it and then observe it. And then once you move through it and you get past that, you'll be like, holy shit, it is simple. And that's a layer. That's another layer that, like, you're back through into the next one. So, yeah, powerful words.
All right. That's not where what was going to start the podcast, but I'm so glad we've gone there. We've talked about it. I'm so glad we've... because that's the biggest thing, that, like, they're just trying to start as a dad to open up to, you know, to even begin is such a hard thing, and it's such a scary thing. So I'm glad we went there. It's a challenge. I know the dads I've talked to and the dads I'm around, it's, you know, it's the probably the biggest thing they face, is they just don't know how to start. They don't know what to do, and they face these barriers. They face, you know, the judgment from other people when they do start. So I am glad we went there. I want to ask now about, so we might just start with, you know, your upbringing, if you want to dive into that a little bit and tell everyone a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So I was born in Scotland, so I'm a little wee Scottish lad. So I was born there. I left there when I was 7, but just to kind of go into the 7 years I was there, I lived on a farm. My family over there, quite very, very close, like, community was very strong there. I was very well known around the, like, school, and obviously spent a lot of time in nature and around animals. when I was two, my parents had a little girl, and she passed away at 48 hours. So, you know, some people are like, oh, but you're only two. It's like energetically, I experienced death and grief and loss very young. I've only kind of pieced that together in the last year of what that unfolded for me throughout my life, carrying a lot of grief, a lot of sadness, shame, you know, lots and lots of just, you know, despair. And I didn't understand why. I thought that was quite normal. Now I understand where it's come from. So my parents, you know, gotta love them. They did the best they could for the circumstances they were thrown at them. They raised me, you know, whilst processing grief and loss, and, you know, there was the depression, and then you got to think of it from a spiritual, and there's an emotional, and there's the mental level of the dissociation. So physically, my needs were all met, which was beautiful. Like, all my needs were met physically, but then on a mental, emotional, spiritual, which is basically my whole journey's been around more of those levels of needs needing within myself needing to be met. That's where my challenges begin. So then they had my second brother, and he was, you know, in the womb, a lot of stress and fear about what's going to happen, same thing that's going to happen. So he came out with just a bundle of energy. He's got pretty, like, you know, we both have ADHD, ADD, but he's kind of high on the spectrum, and he's just all over the shop. He's like a fucking Duracell battery bouncing around the place. And that, I went from quite a solemn, like, very, you know, quiet to more energetic when he came. And then second brother came, and he was quite quiet. And then by that point, he was 2.5 and I was 7, we left Scotland. Now, from what my parents have said, when I was in Scotland, I was very loving, very caring, very nurturing, very connected to nature, very innocent. And then when I left, that's when all, like, the kind of behaviors kicked in, and I was, you know, I was devastated. Like, now I know why I was angry, and I was devastated, why I was destructive, and why I never wanted to listen, and all these different things, and why it played out for my life. So, you know, then stepping into school, being from Scotland, I had the strong accent, very thick Scottish accent. I just became like a clown or a jester, or people were like, yeah, say this and say that. And I was bullied from the age of 7. You know, and I'd either be their friend, and then obviously I wasn't their friend, and then I was their show pony, and then I wasn't their show pony, and it was just this very confusing for me. My mother was going through her own depression and anxiety, and all the different things that come with leaving her whole family and moving overseas. So she was going through her own challenges with that, as well as grieving, still grieving from my daughter, not my daughter, my sister. So yeah, that's kind of what I faced through the first 10 years of my life, was a lot of bullying, depression. My dad being, was an alcoholic, and he had a lot of suppressed rage and anger. That's where, in a way, how I found it hard to express and process anger and rage. I didn't know how to do it. It kind of just came out in little explosions in my life. I turned to drugs and alcohol when I was 12. I've always been addicted to things, so I started playing video games very young, TV, sugar, very young. And then at 12, you know, in high school, you get offered things. I started like dabbling with drinking, and then started smoking pot. That kind of carried on through until I was about 26, when I stopped the drugs and the alcohol properly after a pretty intense experience, which I may cover in another episode if there is one, or in something different. So, but I was in the military for 4 years, which was not helpful. I got pretty heavy PTSD from that. I was consuming more drugs you could poke a stick at in the 4 years I was in. But so my upbringing was, I guess you could say it was challenging, but I look at it as it's brought me to where I am today and who I am today. It's given me the lessons I needed to be who I am today and to get to where I am today. And there's still many more learnings and lessons to come from this. If I could sum up my upbringing, my mum is both love and light and nurturing and caring and empathetic and just all that sides of the rainbow. But then through her own life journey, her own experiences before children, it's fear, loss, like just scarcity. It's just like the other side. So there's two ends of the spectrum, you know, and I notice myself going into one or the other. It's like I'm all in or I'm all out kind of thing. And my father, his own journey as well. He's had a tough life. Growing up on Papua New Guinea for 14 years, then shipped off to boarding school. 12 years and shipped off to boarding school from 12 to 18. And yeah, he's had a pretty tough journey and, you know, he struggled with, you know, alcohol, gambling, addiction, all that kind of stuff, and then suppressed emotions. But now he's a counsellor. He's been doing it for about almost 20 years. And I guess that's where I get my own ability to communicate and empathy and nurturing and caring as well for my mum. And so my upbringing was quite interesting, to say the least, as we all have a very interesting upbringing. And that's, I am a big believer that we choose our parents because of what they're going to bring us for us to grow into this lifetime. I'm a believer of reincarnation. So what we finish off in the last life is we're going to take it into this one. So our karmic predicaments, our karma, and then becomes into our dharma. So for me, that's kind of like how I view life now. And if someone told me that 6 years ago, I would have laughed and not held that. So yeah, I guess that's my story in a bit of a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
Small nut.
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot there's a lot to ask you there, because I want to, to sum up the entire kind of childhood, and like hindsight's 20/20, right? So we can look back on our past and experiences, especially if we've grown from that and understand it a little bit more. Do you think all of that experience was just a coping mechanism for you? Do you think that you know, how you were in school, being the joker, the jester, the drugs, the alcohol, was that just a coping mechanism for something that you didn't understand?
Yeah, totally. My dad brought this up to me, I think it was about 3 or 4 months ago. He came and attempted to confront me. This is just when he started to counsel. I think I was about 11 or 12. And just asked if I was angry with him. You know, do I hate him and things like that. And apparently what I said, I just looked at him and looked away and walked off. You know, as a 12-year-old, I didn't know. When I look back, it was like, yeah, I was fucking angry. I did hate him. There's all these things he ripped me away from. My community and back home, I guess my roots back home. And even though now he is my home, there's still a strong calling in my heart and soul to go back there. And it's been a long time since then. So yeah, all of the drugs, the alcohol, being the jester and the clown, they were coping mechanisms, ego protective measures to survive, to be seen, to fit in. And a big part of my journey was all around. And even I still see it pop up now, is like trying to fit in. And, you know, it's rather than just shine my own light and do that, as you notice the conditioning kind of pops back in, and I'm like, okay, there's still some more stuff there, right? But yeah, I definitely believe all of it were coping mechanisms. And I still remember, like, as a child, my parents worked night shift, they were nurses. So a lot of the time on the weekends, because we weren't, obviously, we weren't at school, I'd spend from 6 a.m. till 10:30, 11, just watching TV and playing Lego. You know, that's the only thing I do, just watch a movie after movie. and playing Lego, and, you know, my parents didn't care what I watched. It was, you know, I was 9 watching MA 15 plus shit. I was just like, I want that movie. Like, yeah, cool, sweet. Then no care. So it's like, I was subjected to some dark shit real early, which makes sense with my childhood, like what I was subjected to when I was 2, like the death and loss. So it's like kind of like the energy, you attract things into your field. But yeah, everything was set up to kind of like be a coping mechanism until I had the snap, shake and wake. And then I started to like, oh fuck, okay, I've got a really, you know, I guess the true awakening moment wasn't so much the 1 year holiday that I took in Bricks and Bars, Hotel Bricks and Bars. It wasn't that was a big awakening, but it was when my partner fell pregnant.
Yeah.
That was just it. I was like, okay, it's on, you know, and I distanced myself from people and people who weren't serving, and really started to look at myself and start to really go deep within. And that was what really shifted. It was like the spirit of a child being grown within my partner, that cosmic force, that energy. It transmuted a lot of shit for me. That first 9 months was just fucking wild.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get into that next. Mm,
yeah.
But first, to kind of, you'd said your parents kind of from a physical point gave you what you needed. Was that, do you think that was their coping mechanism to, well, I can't emotionally and spiritually give you what you need because of we're going through what we're going through, so here's the MA15 movies, here's was it all kind of like material stuff that they were giving you physically? Is that kind of
Not so much in the sense of toys. They didn't just buy me whatever I wanted. That's one thing that my parents never really did, which is in a way has been good, because now as a parent, I don't just buy my kid anything. I'm very much strong boundaries around material stuff. It's like, it was more around like if I wanted like a Game Boy, like as soon as I got a Game Boy, it was game over with computer games and stuff. And then if I wanted a computer to do some computer gaming, like it was more around technology is my vice. Even now it's like, it's a vice of the big boundaries around it, but it was around material. But then my dad also unconsciously, he took me out to nature a lot, which I think was really powerful, because they allowed me, my parents live, when we moved to Australia, we live at the bottom of King Kama Mountain, and there's a track that goes straight up into the mountain. And they just allowed me to play in the bush when I was a kid. So I was like 8, 9 and I could go up there and they didn't care. It was just like, it was whatever, I'll go have fun and just be home at this time. So
yeah.
I think that was really helpful. I was an outside kid, even though I played games and stuff. I wasn't just an inside, let's play games all day kid. I still loved to ride my bike and throw the football around and play out in the yard and tackle and do all that kind of stuff. So it was like, it wasn't just the physical. I think it was more when they were not able to hold me emotionally and mentally. It was like, go watch the TV, or why don't you go play your video games and stuff. Like, my dad suffers from rheumatoid arthritis now, so as life went on, he became like, you know, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, so he couldn't, you know, he could struggle to play with us because of all the pain he was in. So that was kind of when I went real deep into more of the material, video games and TV, and I had to like, I guess, occupy myself and with my brothers. So yeah. Okay. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it did. It did answer the question, because I know now as a parent, we try to overcompensate for our shortcomings, or, you know, if we didn't have much when we were kids growing up, we overcompensate with giving our child everything. But it's, yeah, I just wanted to see how, you know, they dealt with that, because it's a big loss, right? To lose a child at any point is a massive loss. And I think, for no doubt, your parents got the, you know, the comfort, the support from family, friends, but we often forget about the kids. You know, oh, you're two, so we assume that you don't need any help.
Mm.
You know, you don't know any better. But there's just such a powerful force at play that you need just as much at that point. Just because you don't understand it, or you might not understand it, you still feel it. Mm-hmm. And we just assume that, okay, you don't need anything, or we'll overcompensate with an escape, or you know, just giving you what we feel you need, rather than, you know, what you actually need. So yeah, no, you did answer the question.
And that's just what you said was really so powerful, is children's way of expressing their feelings, their emotions that may be stuck or caught, is through play. And we as parents, as you and I both know, is if the child's starting to get destructive, we sometimes try and stop it. But that in itself is, if we hold that with empathy, empathetic understanding and love, that's them having their little moment in their play, destroying everything to release something. And that's where now I'm starting to see it, like, oh shit, okay, that's their way of communicating, is through play, because they don't have the words to articulate how they're feeling or how to kind of get it out of the body. And so spot on, like, as the, you know we try and overcompensate or overcomplicate or stick more stuff on when it's quite simple. It's like you hold another person, let them cry, or let them have a scream, or let them have a little tantrum. And then once the adult has that in that safe space, that safe sacred space, they're like, oh my god, I feel so good, I feel like a lion's come off. Same thing you apply to your child, except you just do it through play. And I think that was very beautifully said, Dan.
Thank you. I watched something yesterday, and it was about, you know, we stop our child having a tantrum, especially at a shopping center, because we fear judgment from other parents, rather than just let our child have that tantrum, let them feel that feeling that they need to feel. We quite often just stop it, like I said, from fear of judgment from other parents, from, you know, from a numerous things. We don't understand it as parents sometimes. Mm. And, you know, put yourself in those shoes, and I've been there, right? It's hard as a parent to pull yourself out of that moment. We often get sucked into, you know, the child's just is doing this to me. You know, the child is having a tantrum because I've said no to a lolly or something like that, where it's just not, that's, you know, that's just not what it's about. And I think, yeah, we've gone off topic, but we stayed on topic. But
that's like what we haven't gone off, because it ties into the start about vulnerability. And if you look at the father, it's like, you could look at it as it being fear of, because if in that moment we need to be holding them with love and nurturing and empathy, and society deems that in a man as not okay. So then it's the fear of being judged. You want to stop it in the moment, stop them from feeling it, where it's like that comes back to the vulnerability thing. In that moment, are you going to be vulnerable with your child, hold them in love, and don't care about what's going on around you? Or are you going to buy into the culture conditioning? So I think it's like, we're not off topic. I think we've just come swinging back around.
Yes. Yeah. So normal is not a word I like to use, but at what point, and was it when your wife was pregnant, was that you kind of looked back on everything and said, and kind of, I guess, realized what had happened, where you'd been, how you got there? Because I'm sure in it all felt like that's just the way. Well, maybe I'm putting words into your mouth here, but did it feel like normal to you, that growing up?
Yeah, that was like, if there's something that I notice about myself, is I am able to adapt to chaos and be normal in it. And it's like, I just adapt. Okay, cool, this is what I'm doing. It could be the most chaotic environment, like, you know, when I was taking drugs, like I was seeing some pretty not nice shit, you know, got to the point where I started to mingle with some gangs almost at that point before the universe stopped me. Thank God. Thank God. So it's like when I look back, it was like when I met my partner, which I met her when she was 16 and I was 22. And as she puts it, he's, I was that hot older guy that always had his shirt off and getting fucked up at parties. You know, I loved the gym. I was obsessed with myself. So I was just like, yeah. And she was 16. And we had this couple few moments where we kind of like, you know, who is this girl or who is that guy? And, you know, and I was friends with her older sister. And, you know, I had a partner who was friends with the older sister. And we just were friends for so long. And then all of a sudden when my last relationship just dissolved and her relationship dissolved, we started to become close again and having these really intimate moments without touch or anything, just these, you know, eye gazing and just these moments of just silence where it's like, oh, who are you? I was at a very low point in my life, and for the third and fourth time I was ready to kill myself. And I stood on the cliff at Copa and I was like, yeah, but it's done. I started writing some shit in my phone and yeah, I'll leave this here for whoever comes and finds me at the bottom, and the phone will be there and I'll have the notes and everything like that. And then she rang me and I was in a really dark void at this point. I didn't think anyone would listen, and she just rang me and goes, what are you doing? And I just snapped out of it. I was like, whoa, I'm in the car. I need to see you right now. She's like, cool, yeah, let's go hang out. And I didn't say anything to her, I didn't tell you what was happening, but it was just that being in her presence helped me go, oh, fuck, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, it happened again. Same spot, same situation, same circumstances. Cliff, phone. She messaged me. Hey, let's hang out. Hey, are you feeling okay? And I was like, oh, what the fuck is this? And that was when I got it. It was this divine intervention. That was when I kind of like woke me up. And I think that was probably the key moment. And that's when our relationship really started to grow. And then fast forward a few years and like having children, like when my partner became pregnant, it was like all the stuff that was causing the resistance with us then started to work, bring us more together. So we started to work together with our indifferences and work together with our different, as I call it, baggage or wounds or traumas, whatever you want to call it. So we started to work together to work through it, to transmute it. And I forgot the question, but I'm just going on a bit of a rambles.
No, you're not rambling. You're answering the question.
Okay, cool.
It was all that kind of normal for you.
Yeah.
And kind of the next part of the question, and you're touching on it there. So when did you, again, snap out of it? It's not the right word, but I can't think of a better term at the moment, but when did you kind of realize, when did you wake up, when was that moment of I need to work this out, I need to work on myself, I've got some stuff I haven't dealt with? When was that kind of moment for you? Was it when Candace was pregnant?
That was probably the moment that anchored it in to it being a practice. So before it was like in and out and in and out, and you know, I'd go between still habits of smoking pot a lot and, you know, taking drugs and alcohol. And you know, when I got out of my little holiday, it was, you know, I was battling still a lot of different things because like I felt amazing when I was in there, and because all the material was ripped out, I had the bare minimum, right, for a year. No technology, no phone, no nothing. It was just bare minimum. And I just started to see who I was. I was like, holy shit. Then you get put back out there and it's like, then you've got technology, then you've got desires, and you can go surfing, I could go do all these different things that were then distracting me again from off my emotions and my feelings and covering and numbing again. And then when my partner became pregnant, which we didn't expect, it's like, I always think, do you actually choose when you have a child? Like, I don't think you do. We were like, yeah, maybe in a year or a year and a half we'll go traveling and do some study. At this point I was studying, and then she came off the pill because it was just not working it with her body. And then within a month she felt pregnant, like super quick, and we're like, oh, okay, well here it is. And that was kind of when, you know, before we knew, like, she was pregnant, it was, we did this workshop, it was the Flower of Life workshop. It's just three or four day intensive where you just go like into deep heart activation and all these different things around Sufism and then ancient Egypt, and then goes in like there's lots, like it's a 4 day intensive, and that was what really opened all of both of us up. And then we found out a week later that she was pregnant, and then from that moment on, it was like we just started just doing like workshop after workshop after workshop after meditation class after, you know, we started, mentors were showing up and people were showing up. We started to just do all these different things with our little daughter, was, and she was receiving all this energy. And yeah, did the same workshop again, as my partner was, I think, 30 weeks pregnant, did that workshop again because it was just like, fuck, may as well do it again. And then, yeah, so the moment of which my partner was pregnant, I think it was an anchoring into the universe or into my life that it's like, okay, you're ready, you're going to take this path, and this path has unfolded for me to be more deep than I could ever imagine, and it continues to deepen every single day. And yeah, so I think there's something very magical about a woman creating a life. And I have a lot of, and I want to share this because I hold this dear to my heart, is I have a lot of reverence for women, as they are, they've been entrusted in the ability to create life, right? And I was looking into some science thing, it's like the egg actually chooses the sperm. It has nothing to do with whether the sperm's strong. It's like the egg acts as a magnet and the sperm's like a little bit of metal. Mm. So it has nothing to do with the man, it's that the egg chooses the sperm. That's just how it is. And women are the bridge or the portal between the spiritual and the physical. If you look in ancient Egypt, you always see that the woman is in a way holding the king, or the, you know, queen's holding the king. And it's like we need to revere our women of this planet, where there's be little children, to the elders, as they are the wisdom keepers. And I'm a big believer of they are the wisdom keepers. Mm-hmm. And we're moving into that matriarchal, or I really hope we're moving into a more matriarchal society where we start to see women leading, women with the power. And we are seeing that. There's many people, and not even just on the Central Coast, but around the world, these women are stepping into the power. And it's just like we were talking, having a conversation earlier, it's like in that book that you mentioned, The Way of the Superior Man. Yeah. Women are here to test us. They're here to see if we can hold them, if we here see if we can, like, yeah, hold them in their fullness and have an open heart, so then they will receive and also give us that love back. But they test us, and that's where a lot of men fall on their face, because they think, they'll say things like, oh, this bitch is crazy, you know, she's doing my head in, and this is, and it's, well, no, look at your fucking self, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because ultimately that woman is offering you a deep lesson in growth and expansion towards your heart.
Yeah.
And that's, I know this is, it's a bit of a thing, but a bit of an off thing, but I just feel all fathers and all men, whether you have kids or not, whether you have a partner or not, to look at women as not only as a tool for growth, but as in this beautiful union to expand and grow. Even if it's just a 3-month little thing, like if you look at it as a reflection of God, you're going to take away profound lessons.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go over here.
So many things in there. Like, yeah, just so many things. And I think, you know, for we... it's easy to fear a strong woman, very easy to fear a strong woman, because it's a test. It's a massive test to, and I think that, you know, I don't have the answer, but I feel it's to, you know, not to make us vulnerable or to get us vulnerable, but it's to trigger us in a way that we don't
let ourselves be triggered. It's to give us that growth opportunity, like you've said. And I think, yeah, we can look at it in a way where I'm afraid, I don't want any part of that, or, you know, put the, you know, let our ego get in the way and say, well, no, that doesn't make any sense. I'm the, you know, I'm the man, I'm the provider, I'm the everything, I'm, you know, I'm top of the food chain. But if we, you know, just let ourselves use it as a growth opportunity, it's so much more powerful. And for me, I know, you know, mine and Chrissy's relationship, and we talked about it earlier as well, that's where I get triggered the most. And but that's also where I've grown the most as well from that, you know. And it hasn't always been that day, let me been that way, because I've quite often just let, you know, my own ego get in the way, and it's like, no, that's, yeah. So yeah, we haven't gone all the way over and it's a powerful, I think it's a powerful thing to remember, because it's, you know, they are, yeah, it's just, even, you know, that you say the egg chooses the sperm, even that's a powerful thing, right? To think that, you know, the woman's body is choosing, you know, it was probably a man said that the man, you know, the sperm chooses the egg, because we let the ego get in the way. We think we're the, you know, the almighty force. But yeah, it's just, yeah, to be able to let down your guard, to open up to vulnerability, such a powerful thing. And I think that's, again, it's not off topic, it's just looking at it from a different angle. And I think
100%. I think you've said that perfectly. It's something we all need to eventually learn as men. It's integral to our growth, I feel. Even if it's not your partner, you might just be a friend who's a woman, might be your sister, cousin, your mum, maybe it's a mentor or a therapist who's a woman. We can learn through their reflection. So yeah.
Now I don't know where to go. So many
doorways.
Yes. I'll go back to Candace, the kids. So tell me a little bit more about them.
So, like you mentioned before about the having that fear around a woman, like, and the power, like my partner is, she's fucking powerful, and I look up to her. In, if put it this way, I wouldn't be the man I am today if I didn't meet this woman. I don't think I would have met a woman if I didn't trust my intuition and heart. There were so many ego checkpoints trying to pull me out, like alluring me out of this relationship for the first 2 years before she fell pregnant. And yeah, she's powerful, she's creative, she's imagination. And I've watched her go through, it's fucking inspiring. She's 25, and the work in which she's doing on herself, I'm fucking inspired at the same time as I'm scared, because the power in which it's going to just erupt out of her. It's like I'm gonna be like, oh, you know, I'm on my knees, you know. And I'm not trying to like put her up on a pedestal, but I'm very, very grateful and blessed to be walking this path with my partner, and she helps me in many ways as I help her, as she says, and we're growing very, very strongly together, and each day we're communicating deeply and learning more about each other. And I'm very blessed to walk this earth with her beautiful spirit. And yeah, you might hear more of her some point in the future, because she'll probably pop up again. But I'll go into my eldest. So Scarlett, she's very, very sensitive. She's very psychic. That's been very apparent from very young. Very creative, loves reading books, loves to be out in nature, which is beautiful because I fucking love nature.
Yeah.
We have a very strong connection. If I was to connect into some sort of well, I get this feeling, if some of you who are listening, listen, like believe in past life and reincarnation, I go, I feel like me and her had some form of relationship as a couple, and she was the one I looked up to. Because she just, like, sometimes the check and corrects I get from her are just so spot on. She'll just come and I'll be on my phone doing absolutely nothing. She'll literally just rip it out of my hands and throw it across the room and get off your phone, Dad. I'm like, whoa, okay, thank you. Check and correct kind of thing. And she does that a lot, even when I'm not even on my phone. Just like, there's been a few moments where she's brought me to tears just through her beingness, which, when I really needed it.
How old is she?
She's just turned three. She was 2 and 4 months, I'd be going through quite a deep process through this 10-week program, and I had all this emotion come up, and I didn't feel vulnerable and feel enough ability to be vulnerable with my partner and in the house. So I went out and sat under the big tree, and she came down with me, and she goes, are you okay, Daddy? And I'm like, no, I'm not okay. And then she just goes, I'm here for you. And then put her hand on my shoulder, and I was done. I started tearing up, and she goes, she's holding me. And it was just the most beautiful moment to see, like, a 2 and a bit year old holding space, like an elder. Like, and this is, I was just like, shit, this is like the powerful. It's like, our children can hold space from a very young age, from zero even. And so that was Seth's scar. And that's happened a few times where she's evoked shift so powerful that I've had to go and have a cry or have a, which has been what I needed in that moment. So yeah, that's her being, if I could describe it. I'm sure there's much more that could be described as we move on. She's only three. And then we have little Ava. Wow. Wow. So she came in like a spirit storm. Fuck. So, like, I had my first holidays with her, like, first 4 week holidays off ever since being a dad. And here's me, I'm like, yeah, I'm on holidays, let's drink and have a smoke. And then about 9 days in, after she was born, like, it wasn't like it was all day, it was like, you know, nighttime and stuff. I was like, my mate checked me, he goes, what are you doing, bro? Like, why are you relishing that newborn? And I was just like, fuck. And I had this awareness moment, was like, my ego was trying to protect and put up walls to the power of this little spirit. So powerful. And then I realized, and that was like, that was the moment. So really, you know, I stopped drinking, and I just stopped smoking pot. And she's only 16 months, and just the pure innocence and spirit. And this beautiful, mystical aspect of herself. She's just so independent and flowing, and just flows around, goes into nature, does its own thing, then comes back to you and goes back. And she's just like watching her. It's just been like the most magical experience. And then going back into like past life stuff, I feel like this, we've had many together, and there's this bond I can't even put into words. It's like I sit there feeding her at night, or whenever I'm holding her, looking into her eyes, and I'm just like, you know me deeper than I know myself. And I'm very blessed to be walking this path with both my girls. And but Ava, there's just something about her being that I see her as a true guru and a master. It's like I've learned more in the last 15 months about myself since she blessed us in her physical presence out of the womb than any workshop, any breath work, any plant medicine. Like, she has reflected back and helped me clear and process some fucking deep shit. So, to put it in a nutshell, I don't know how to describe her. It's the mystic, the spiritual mystic, and she's 15 months old. So,
wow, that's like, I know a lot of people might not understand that, a lot of people might not recognize it. But to be able to, you know, I think the word I was looking to before in regards to, you know, powerful women, right? We need to surrender. We need the ability to surrender to that. And yeah, I just think that if we can do that, and if we can see our children on the same level, and we talked about this earlier, right, that, you know, I see them at, you know, we often put kids at such a low level and we think we have to go down to their level, but the reality is kids are at such a high level and we need to raise ourselves to their level. And just that level of understanding, and I know you don't take it for granted, right, but give me just a real brief, how did you get there? Because I also want to talk about and the rites of passage as a parent, mm. and your belief and your kind of feelings around that. So mm. I guess, how did you get to that? Like, how can you look at your child and see that teacher, that mm. mystic, that soul kind of connection, mm. and then we'll dive into the rite of passage as a parent.
Cool. I'll try and keep this as deliverable as possible because it's so much trying to come through. So I guess for me, the big lesson in being able to see my child as a teacher was when I learned through another parenting course and through my own kind of readings around parenting, was that their play is their way of communicating. That's when I really started to understand it. It's like when you see how they're playing, is you can kind of tune in to how they're feeling, and you can even reflect it back to them, you know, from about age 2, 2.5, when they can, you can say, hey, you're feeling happy right now. Yeah, I am happy. We can be like, oh, are you feeling frustrated? Yeah, you know, or you're feeling frustrated right now, or something like that, where it's like, then sometimes they're doing things that you become so triggered, like you in your own being, you're like, fuck, why, what are they doing this for? And it's taking the time out to contemplate upon that, maybe journal upon it, maybe talking to a friend or seeking a mentor or a therapist or whatever who specializes in that, to kind of get a deeper perspective of what that could be within you. So my little Scar, I'll give you an example. So little Scarlet, I struggled with dissociation. I struggled to play with my daughter in the first year and a bit, because of my own upbringing was dissociated. So I would just it was like unconsciously and conditioned to dissociate from the moment, whether it's to grab my phone, whether it's just to go and be in my head, or it's to go and do the dishes, or go and just not be there holding her when there was missing moments, right? And you know, to the point where she would chuck my phone out, and then I started to work through that with the breath work. For me was the big shifter. Doing holotropic breath work, you know, I've done my psilocybin journeys, some deep ones, and I was microdosing for a while. And but holotropic breath work or rebirthing breath work, they're the two that really helped me shift the emotion. And then doing some embodied movement, some like movement that isn't controlled necessarily, it's like you just let your body do its thing, and to shake, maybe it's to shake the energy out, or maybe it's just to do all these sporadic stuff. And I learned this through this 6-week course that I've done numerous times. But I guess to summarize how I came to this kind of way of connecting on a soul level to my child, and I'm not saying I do this all the time, this is something that's forever growing, as you know, I fall into conditioning from my own parents all the time. It's a process. Is going into your day as a father, knowing that yes, you're a father, but it's not your only role. That they, yes, they're your child, but that's not their only role. And it's kind of going in like, okay, well, this is who I am to them for this moment, but I'm also this, I'm also that, I am feeling this and I am feeling this, and going in and really feeling into what's there in those moments. And I think that's the powerful thing, is we forget, as mums and dads, is we get caught up in our heads trying to figure it all out when the feelings are all in our body. And when we feel it, you start to really feel it, it's not so bad. And a big one that stops us from experiencing this, and all parents will admit this and put their hand up, I can guarantee you, is guilt. Guilt is the stopper. So if you can start feeling the guilt, working with the guilt in whatever which way that works for you, you will start to experience more of those beautiful emotions with your child, because the guilt in the way they feel that and they don't understand it, so then they start to do behave in certain ways that then causes you to feel do this and do that, or parent like this and parent like this, and then you feel guilty about it. So we have to constantly go back and, as I call it, the fire of purification, is purify the guilt, you know? And I'm guilty of sometimes not doing that. It's just ironic. So, you know, it's like, and I think, so I guess if that was, I hope, hopefully that's a nice delivered way of putting it, but yeah, focus on your breath, focus on your feelings, and practice some form of mindfulness that's going to help you create the witness on the observer. So when you're in those moments, like we mentioned, is like Ram Dass speaks about, is you want to be in it, not of it.
Yeah.
You know, in it, observing and witnessing this moment, not of it, thinking that this totality of you. So I guess that's how I've perceived parenting. But like I've mentioned, I'm not like that all the time. It's a process. It's a journey, and you know, I get caught every day.
Yeah.
But I look at that, and I'm like, oh, where did I get stuck? How did I get stuck? What was going on for me then? What feeling was arising? And work with it the best I can, whether it's in the moment, at night, the next day, having conversations with people. So I hope that answered the question as best as I could.
Yeah, it did. It did. And I just... You gave some not only really good advice, but a few tools there as well. And I think, you know, to be able to, I think two things for me as a parent, it's to think I need to be perfect, and then when I'm not perfect, I fear talking about it because of judgment. So perfection and judgment are the two biggest things. But I think once we, you know, because we're not sitting here saying we're both perfect parents, I never created this space to have perfect parents in it. But it's a space free of judgment, and it's a space free of, you know, being able to recognize that every day, every moment is, there's a lesson in it. And it doesn't have to be, you know, and it's not about being deep. It's just about recognizing the moments where you've handled that the way you feel you needed to handle it, and there's moments where you've not handled it the best. And to recognize that, okay, what do I need to do? And I think, yeah, that advice to, and those tools that you've given, yeah, powerful things. And I think, do what works for you.
Yeah.
And I think the easiest thing, right, is to again, and I'll link it back to the very beginning, is to start. Just start somewhere.
Yeah, spot on. Just start somewhere. I think that's, if you don't start and you just stand on the start line and then just keep questioning why nothing's happening, you're just going to stay on the start line, and then the race will finish, and then you'll be like, fuck, my kids are 30, they've moved out, why didn't I step off the line? And like you said, it doesn't have to be a deep step or a deep lesson, or doesn't have, just take one step. You can pull hundreds of lessons out of one day, but you don't need to do that. It's what works, like you just said, do what works best for you. And I'm a big believer of, we're all on our own unique path, we're all on our own path, and every path is leading back to love or heart or, yeah, or ego. But ego is all pervasive and always there. So I think you put that beautifully.
Probably. Did we talk about? Let's talk about the rite of passage as a parent. Dive into that for me and. Don't worry about the time.
Yeah, I know. The time.
Don't worry about the time. Okay. Well, I think it's a, you know, where I don't want to glaze over it, but I wanted to give a little bit of, you know, to give it some context, but also to talk about it a little as well. So
for me, and this will be different for any man, but for me personally, it being a rites of passage, it's like the woman as well. It's rites of passage for them. They go through. It's just a tremendously physical, emotional, mentally, spiritual experience. Growing a child within them, and we as the protector, some of us the breadwinner, need to realize that we are going through our own rites of passage of holding them. And so many times I hear from, you know, I find it quite easy to connect with women. It's just how my life has unfolded. I used to hear from a lot of pregnant women, like, oh, he doesn't care. He still makes me get the groceries out of the car and I'm 32 weeks pregnant, or still making me clean. He's still making me do this. And I just, why is he not just seeing that I'm heavily fucking pregnant? And this is the beginning of the rites of passage, is when you need to step into this responsibility role, or you're going to get punched in the face when your child comes. I'm sorry, you're going to get punched in the fucking face. And in a way, I nipped it in the butt halfway through the pregnancy. First half, because she was breezing through it and it was all sweet. Like, I didn't even really know she was pregnant. It was coming in and out. Oh, shit, I'm going to be a dad. Oh, I'm going to be a dad. And then when I started to see she had a bump, I'm like, fuck, I'm going to be a dad. And then that's where I started to really like pick up my game with responsibility and really supporting. And I'm not perfect. I had still lots of shit going on back then, you know. And I guess the rites of passage is, if as a father, if you still think you can go with the boys and go to the pub and get fucked up and go and play out all these behaviors and patterns, you are missing the rites of passage. You are not seeing the rites of passage. And when your child comes, if you still believe that going and doing that throughout the weeks on the weekends, and you know, you can perceive this if you want as a judgment, but for me it's an observation, as parenting is a spiritual practice. That's how I view it, and I'm not going to own that. And it's not okay, because then the child sees that, but then you could look at it from the perspective of the child has chosen the parents to experience that, to then process that. So there's two ways you can look at it.
Yeah.
That is the rites of passage for both the mum, the dad, and the parent. But if you look at the rites of passage on a more deeper perspective, it's like you're being pulled through a portal to up-level, to upskill, to expand, to thrive with your partner, with your child. You're growing together. And like you said in the beginning, it's like it doesn't matter what size the step is or how deep you go, is just taking that first step and knowing that, okay, I'm about to bring a child into this world. And I've got a friend at the moment who's about to become a dad, and he saw the rite of passage straight into it, like, you know, started seeing some of the toxic friends and the groups, and you know, really started to put boundaries in place within himself and with externally, and start to really work through some of his shit, because he's like, I'm bringing a child in this world. I don't want to fuck this child up, as you know, as much, you know, all children are going to come with some form of wounds and baggage. That's what they choose us for. You know, none of us are enlightened yet. No. So it's like, I guess for me, in a nutshell, the rites of passage of fatherhood is deepening into your own being, your own connection with your emotions, your thoughts, your imagination, and your body, as well as honoring their spirit, their imagination, their creativity, their emotions, and their body. And then as well, doing that within your relationship with your partner. It's about creating balance and harmony and finding that through the reflection of family. And I feel like that's a big reason why society and some aspects of culture steer away from family, is because it's a powerful transmuter of, if you're able to see. Yeah, I think that's all I've got on the rites of passage. I could keep going in different perspectives, but
no, I think you've put it in a nutshell very well. I think a lot of people, or some people, might get uncomfortable hearing a lot of that, and that's okay.
Perfectly fine. Just to touch on that, like, I don't think I mentioned this within this podcast yet, but I never wanted to have kids, ever. I've never wanted to have kids, and it wasn't until I met my partner. You know, I thought I was going to be, it had nothing to do with money, but it was just all, I was going to be a shit dad. I was selfish and wanted to do all the things I wanted to do. I didn't want to raise kids. I was going to shit, meet my partner. She'll be a good dad. You'll be okay. And it's like, I still didn't think about it. So if someone would have delivered that to me back then, I would have felt confronted, comfortable. There'd be resistance, there'd be fear. And that's perfectly okay, because that's part of the human experience. Yep. All those things.
Yeah. And yeah, I think if it does make you uncomfortable, use that as an opportunity to grow. Reach out, journal. You know, we've touched on a lot of stuff today, but take the first step. If it does make you uncomfortable, take that first step, because it's a scary thing. If and you said it right, if you're not ready now, if you're not ready beforehand, something's going to happen and you will be punched in the face. You'll be punched in the face, you'll be kicked in the guts, and it will, and that's just the reality of it. And you know, to say that, I'm not going to sit here either and say that kids don't change your life. They bloody change your life. But that is what is supposed to happen. You know, just because you can't go to the pub every Friday night, that's not a reason not to. Your kids aren't the reason that that's happening.
Mm.
Your kids aren't an excuse, because I think we can easily do that as well. We use our kids as an excuse not to grow. We use our kids as an excuse not to get out of our comfort zone. We use our kids as an excuse, you know, not to do the things that we're passionate about. So there's no, at some point, you're going to get punched in the face. So I think, do it earlier, because it's far easier to do it earlier than I think it would be to do it later. Because my biggest fear was I would resent having kids.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear was that it would change who I was. It would make everything different, it would be harder. And that's actually been the thing that I've loved about parenting probably the most, is that it did all of those things.
Mm.
So yeah, because what you were saying, again, had you have said that to me years ago, I would have been super uncomfortable. I would have felt like I was being called out. And I just want people to understand that that's okay. All of that is okay.
Yeah, like I'll go back to the pub thing and the getting fucked up. There's nothing wrong with that. If you find some joy in that, fuck, go and do it. But if that's taking up a priority on your list, and you might not see that your partner's struggling or your partner's going through, like most women struggle with postnatal depression. Some of them don't even know that they're struggling with it till years later. Oh, they're like, shit, that was what that was. because they come through it. And I guess that's what I was touching on about the rites of passage is looking after for our partner, our woman, you know. Because at the end of the day, they birthed the child. We didn't do shit. Well, what do we do? Our sperm got magneted to them. So I think you've said it perfectly. And yeah.
Any final thoughts? I've got one last question, but any final thoughts?
Be easy on yourself. That's a big one. Like, don't whip yourself, man. Like, and I'm guilty and I'm culprit. I whip myself if I'm not up to the perfectionist with what I was put as parenting. And I've really taken a long time to be able to place the whip down and not do it and just go, okay, how can I approach this better? And I guess having humor about your own parenting and having some humility and just looking at it, it's like it's happening for you, and just be, let it happen. And but the main thing, just be easy on yourself. Like, the fact that you're a parent and your soul has chosen to be a parent, like, I think that is the most beautiful unfoldment any soul can go into, regardless of what level. If you're down the end struggling as a dad or a mum, or you're right at the end and you're like, fuck yeah, I got this in the bag, you know, it's a beautiful unfoldment for all beings. So just be easy on yourself. I think that's the big lesson that I've had to learn.
We're all learning, that's for sure. And everyone's got something to teach. So we might finish it there, actually.
I
want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for being so open, honest, and vulnerable. Thank you for the tools that you've given, the experience you've shared. Because, like, I get a lot out of this, but I also want this space to be for you. I want this space to be comfortable, judgment free, and I want everyone to feel that. And I think we've provided that today with you being so open and vulnerable. So thank you.
Thanks, Dan. I just want to acknowledge as well the space in which you hold. It is non-judgmental, fully accepting, it's open. I feel safe. I feel heard and listened to and seen, most importantly seen. And we acknowledge what you're doing for the community, like building a Dad's Lifting Dad community. I think it's beautiful, especially on the Central Coast where I'm from. So I want to thank you for bringing that to the coast. And where this is going to go, who knows? Like, I feel like it's going to grow into a huge thing. And yeah, I just want to acknowledge that the work you're doing is beautiful, and what you've created is going to change a lot of people's perspectives on fathering. Not even just fathering, parenting in general. So thanks, Dan.
I received that. Thank you. Thank you. Shout out what you're doing, man, your business, because I know you're doing some awesome things. So plug it here, please, because...
So I have a business called Mindfully Primal. In that, my offerings are transformational counseling and coaching, as that's what I studied as an associate degree in transpersonal psychotherapy. I also have started an embodied movement, more mindful movement class, which I hope to create many classes. Dan comes to it, which is awesome. So hit me up if you're interested in that kind of movement. I've moved since the age of 12, if you don't include football, from the age of 7. So I've moved my whole life. As well as I offer Reiki energy healing, and, well, that's a whole nutshell, that kind of energy hands-on healing. So I offer that as well. You can see me at... I'm sure you'll tag me in all the different tags. So.
Give it a say, though.
Speak it out. At the underscore mindful underscore dad. It's my main profile. And then it's, I think, at mindfully underscore primal. You'll see it on the main one. Or just www.mindfullyprimal.com. But yeah, that's what I'm doing now. I hope to create some programs down the track. Who knows what that's going to unfold into. So I'm just letting that do its thing. But super stoked to be on here. First podcast, and I wouldn't have not taken this opportunity, as a lot of what Dan is bringing, I hold dear to my heart, and I'm so, so glad that I could be here to support not only Dan's work and his what he's doing, but the rest of the fathers here on planet Earth. You!
Honored, and I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Just wanted to jump on and let the community know we kicked off our first of hopefully many Dad's Nights on Wednesday. Together with Best Self Movement and the Private Studio, we had our first Dad's Lifting Dad's Night. It was an open discussion covering everything from being a dad, pregnancy, the birth, and all things parenthood. It was an extremely powerful night, and myself and Nick are extremely grateful for those that contributed. If you would like to be a part of the next one, make sure you're following Best Self Movement and the Private Studio on Instagram, and you are also part of our private Facebook community at Dads Lifting Dads on Facebook. Thank you for tuning into the episode. I genuinely appreciate you taking the time to listen. The Dads Lifting Dads podcast is not just for dads. So if this episode resonated with you, or you know a loved one that may get some value from this, then please share it with them. If you would like to join our private Facebook group, you can find us by searching Dads Lifting Dads through Facebook. I can be found at bestselfmovement.com.au and also on social media at bestself_movement_wellness.